Need help sharing your faith with a Latter-day Saint friend? Introducing Christianity to Mormons by Eric Johnson may help. Available at the Utah Christian Research Center, 579 West Galena Park Place in Draper, Utah. Open Wednesday through Saturday at 10 a.m. Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
If you lifted a box but didn't know what was inside the box, how would you know you're actually lifting gold plates? Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. And with me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We're talking about an article that was in the Liahona magazine in the March 2024 edition of the Liahona magazine, an article written by a senior historian for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, a man by the name of Mark Ashurst McGee. He wrote an article titled Witnesses of the Gold Plates of the Book of Mormon. And we are now looking at page U10 under the heading Witnesses in Manchester. Yesterday, we were talking about William Smith, who happens to be Joseph Smith's younger brother, and how young William had a vivid memory of witnessing the plates, which he later shared in a sermon. And this is what he said. When the plates were brought in, they were wrapped up in a tow frock. My father then put them in a pillowcase. Father said, "What, Joseph, can't we not see them?" Joseph responded, "No, I was forbidden to show them until they are translated, but you can feel them. We handled them and could tell what they were, could tell whether they were round or square, could raise the leaves this way," raising a few leaves of the Bible before him. "One could easily tell that they were not a stone hewn out to deceive or even a block of wood." Now, this is the case where they're wrapped up in a cloth, but there are other stories of the plates being in a box. Now, the question that I asked at the beginning of this show, how would you really know what was in this cloth unless you were able to see them? Now, we are not saying that Joseph Smith did not have anything that could have resembled plates that he claimed he received from an angel named Moroni. The question is, did they really make up this ancient document that Smith claimed? Now, you might be able to have what I called yesterday a prop, something that seems to fit the description that Joseph Smith gives of his gold plates, but are they really what he claims them to be? You're not seeing them. They're wrapped up, or, as I mentioned earlier, in a box, and we're going to talk about that as we go on to this article. Then Mark Ashurst McGee goes on to say, on another occasion, William provided further information.
Quote, "I could tell they were plates of some kind and that they were fastened together by rings running through the back," end quote. He also wrote that in addition to feeling the individual plates and rings, he had hefted the entire artifact. Quote, "I was permitted to lift them. They weighed about 60 pounds according to the best of my judgment," end quote. Joseph's younger sister, Catherine, age 14, also got to hold the plates the day Joseph brought them home. She, quote, "rippled her fingers up the edge of the plates and felt that they were separate metal plates and heard the tinkle of sound that they made," end quote.
Now, as I mentioned before, if these plates are really made of gold, they would not be making this tinkling sound, unless, of course, they were made of an alloy. Now, the angel Moroni never says that the plates are made of an alloy. He merely described them as gold plates, and as we brought out last week, there have been LDS leaders, one man in particular, Franklin D. Richards, who was an apostle in the church, who he believed that the plates were made of pure gold. That phrase, pure gold, was also used in a Church News article as well. And so there seems to be some kind of confusion, or at least a difference of opinion as to what the plates were actually made of. Were they pure? Were they not? Were they an alloy? We don't know because nobody really saw them except with what appears to be the eye of faith or in a vision. This portion of the story that we just read really becomes irrelevant. You can guess and say that the plates weighed about 60 pounds, but we have a set of 50-pound plates at the Utah Christian Research Center. And even though we are told that Joseph Smith's wife used to move the plates around to do her work. If she did, 50-pound plates are pretty heavy to move, laying on a flat surface. Ours are on a wooden stand that makes it much easier to lift, but you take them off that wooden stand and they become very difficult to handle, which makes me wonder, could Emma really move plates that were 60 pounds? And again, 60 pounds is an arbitrary weight. They're just guessing. Then it goes on in this article to talk about Mother Lucy. Now, that would be Lucy Mack Smith, the mother of Joseph Smith.
Mother Lucy later shared her experiences with a neighbor, Sally Bradford Parker, who wrote, quote, "I asked her if she saw the plates. She said no, it was not for her to see them, but she hefted and handled them, and I believed all she said, for I lived by her 8 months, and she was one of the best of women," end quote. Though she never saw the plates uncovered, Lucy was certain of their authenticity and the validity of their translation.
Let me stop you there, Eric, because though she never saw the plates uncovered, Lucy was certain of their authenticity and the validity of their translation. Now, can you imagine having Lucy Mack Smith in a courtroom setting and she's on the witness stand? And an attorney, a prosecuting attorney, asks her, "Now, you claim that you were certain of their authenticity and you were certain of the validity of the plate's translation. Mrs. Smith, do you read Reformed Egyptian? Can you read and understand Reformed Egyptian?" Well, she's going to have to say no, because nobody could read and understand Reformed Egyptian, not even her son. He needed instruments by which the Reformed Egyptian could be readable to him in English.
And let's just be clear for those who might not know, there is no such language as Reformed Egyptian, so nobody could ever read a language that doesn't exist.
So when Mark Ashurst McGee says, though she never saw the plates uncovered, that doesn't seem to help his case. And then goes on to say Lucy was certain of their authenticity and the validity of their translation. That obviously doesn't really help his case, because she couldn't know those things.
Well, if you're going to the court of law, let's put Sally Bradford Parker on the stand, who said, "I asked her," referring to Mother Lucy, "if she saw the plates. She said no, it was not for her to see them, but she hefted and handled them. And I believed all she said, for I lived by her 8 months, and she was one of the best of women." Bill, we have neighbors. I have neighbors that have lived near me for 10, 15 years. And maybe they're the best of people, but I don't know them that well to be able to say, "Well, I'm going to believe anything you tell me because I lived by you for 8 months." It just doesn't, it seems very arbitrary.
And I certainly don't want to imply that Mother Lucy Mack Smith could have been a serial killer, but isn't that something you often hear from neighbors after they finally arrested a serial killer that was living nearby in their neighborhood? "He was just the nicest guy. And yet he's got bodies buried in his basement." Again, I'm not implying any comparison like that to Lucy Mack Smith. I'm sure she was a very nice woman, very sincere, but sometimes even sincerity can overlook certain facts that are necessary to draw a proper conclusion.
McGee continues, "Others in the Palmyra and Manchester area where the Smith family lived were permitted to heft the plates while they were stored inside a box or in some other kind of container. Martin Harris reported that his wife, Lucy Harris, and one of their daughters, probably Lucy or Duty, visited the Smiths and were allowed to heft the plates. Both told Martin that they were quite heavy. Then Martin Harris himself visited the Smiths and had the same experience."
So that goes back to the question that I asked earlier. How would you know really what you're lifting if you never saw what was inside a wooden box that you happened to heft, and that's the word that's used in this account. So you lifted a box. You lifted a box that was heavy. Maybe it made a metal sound if you shook it up and down. But how do you know that's really gold plates that were delivered by an angelic messenger that told the story of ancient inhabitants? You wouldn't know that at all. You can only get that kind of information from one person. That would be Joseph Smith. Then the question needs to arise, is Joseph Smith someone that you can really trust? Now, we know that all these people do tend to trust Joseph Smith. They seem to be, as we've mentioned, in a small circle of friends and family. So it's not unusual for us to assume that these people would be more willing to believe what Joseph Smith was telling them. Then we go on to the story about how Martin Harris related to Alva Beeman, it's spelled B-E-M-A-N, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, who lived in the area as well. What does it say about Alva Beeman?
He was also permitted to heft the plates in a box and, quote, said he heard them jink, end quote. The plates had presumably moved when the box was handled to Alva, making the sound of clinking metal.
Okay, so he may have had some metal inside the box, but how do you know they are what Joseph Smith claimed them to be? You see, it's one thing to say, well, we've had people lift boxes that had what they were told were the plates, or they lifted something wrapped in a heavy cloth that they were told were gold plates. But were they really? And if you're going to place your eternal destiny on this individual's story, don't you want to really make sure that what you're being told is true?
Before we move on, Bill, I just want to say, page U10, the witnesses in Manchester, if you're trying to help people believe that the witnesses saw real plates, I'm not sure anything we've read today is going to help a person say, well, I'm convinced that these were real plates because I haven't been given anything of substance.
Next, we're going to move on to the witnesses in Harmony, and this is found on page U12 of Mr. Mark Ashurst McGee's article, where it says, by December 1827, there had been several attempts to steal the plates, so Joseph decided to move with Emma to the home of her parents in Harmony Township, Pennsylvania.
It continues, when Joseph and Emma arrived, Joseph allowed Isaac Hale, Emma's father, to heft the plates in a box. Isaac later stated, quote, I was allowed to feel the weight of the box, and they gave me to understand that the book of plates was then in the box, end quote. Yet he was unconvinced and dissatisfied with the situation. He told Joseph to either show him the plates or remove them from his house. Joseph hid the plates in the nearby woods until he and Emma moved into their own home on the Hale property. Bill, I'm going to suggest that this man, Isaac Hale, is a hero in my mind.
Well, when you think about it, he is the one who seems to approach this somewhat skeptically. And I don't blame him for his skepticism. Remember, Isaac Hale wasn't a real fan of Joseph Smith. Why? Because Joseph Smith hung around some people that he felt had dubious backgrounds. He was known as a money digger. This did not sit well with Isaac Hale, especially when Joseph Smith starts eyeing his daughter Emma. He is not in favor of this relationship, neither is his wife. In fact, when Joseph Smith finally marries Emma, he has to do so by taking across the state lines into New York to a town called Bainbridge, and it is there that he marries Emma Smith. His relationship with his father-in-law, I'm not saying that Isaac didn't try to make it better. I mean, by the fact that he's allowing his son-in-law and his daughter to live on his property certainly shows that he's at least trying to make amends or getting along with his son-in-law. But even to his dying day, he was very critical of Joseph Smith and critical of the movement that he brought about. Tomorrow, we're going to continue, once again, looking at this article dealing with alleged witnesses who supposedly saw or felt or heard the gold plates.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism.